And Salvi hits it deep to center field. Trout is at the wall, and that is into the hedges for a two-run home run.
Give it back.
Ooh, speaking of never give it back, Hunter Dozier blasts one into left field, and the Royals have three runs and two home runs in the eighth inning. And they have taken a four-run lead, 6-2.
And 6-2 would be the final, as Chris Bubich break him out. Had an outstanding game last night. Dusty Donison with you here on the Sports Ticket this morning with Jason Broadfoot here on this Tuesday, June 21st. Summer has
first
started.
First day of summer, yeah.
It felt like summer all last week. I don't know what they're talking about. Summer begins today.
Right. Now we can actually, you know, say it feels like summer because it actually is summer, but it has felt like summer for the last week. You're right. It's the longest day of the year as far as sunshine is concerned. So.
Yeah, I had a buddy that got married on Saturday, and that was a real nice day in Manhattan, let me tell you. Listen, congrats to Sam and Madison, but it was hot Saturday, Sam.
Yes.
Sam ain't listening. He's somewhere overseas probably right now on his honeymoon. He's got to be having a good time.
One of my friends had a wedding this time of year, and of course it was Northeast Nebraska, which isn't quite as humid as, let's say, Manhattan would normally be, but this particular week was, and the church was by a cornfield, and the photographer or videographer wanted us to, he wanted the groom before the wedding to run away into the cornfield and wanted us groomsmen and ushers to go chase him. I said, nope, now you guys can do it, but I'm not going in the corn. I'm not in my tux, not in 95 degree heat and the humidity, and then just get the bugs and stuff, and it's just even gonna be worse than the corn. I'm not doing it. I'm not, you know, you guys can do it, but
yeah.
This is a bad ask. Bad ask. Bad idea. And so they came up with something different, but you know, everybody thinks they want an outdoor wedding, but you gotta be careful on when you choose them. I don't know if your friends wanted the outdoor wedding or indoor, but
they were indoor. Yeah. So, but it was still hot, you know, when we had to go outdoors.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
I didn't have to ride on a hot party bus like some of my family and friends did. So I was good with that. Coming up here on the Sports Ticket, we're going to recap the Royals' win from
last
night.
More wedding talk, too.
Yeah, more wedding talk. I don't know. Maybe so. Who knows? More breaking up talk. There is actually more of that coming up on the Sports Ticket as another prominent golfer is headed to live from the PGA. Also, we knew that was coming, that some of these, but this guy has not actually been mentioned yet as far as some of the names we've already said. His name has been in talks, but apparently today that became official. Also, we're going to hear from Dayton Moore. He spoke yesterday to media at his at a community center that he holds a baseball camp at. So he gave his thoughts on where the Royals sit right now, and we're going to hear from him and dissect that a little bit and talk a little bit about the Royals and where they're at right now, the disappointing season that they're in the middle of. Also, another close no-hit bid last night in Major League Baseball. We'll get a Cubs update from Jason as well. And then we will talk about, obviously, the Stanley Cup Finals game 3 as Tampa Bay tries to get back into the series after going down 2-0. College World Series update, and Wimbledon has their top two seeds marked because it's significant because somebody that would be a top seed is not eligible to play in this year's tournament. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well, as those seeds came out today for Wimbledon. They're in qualifying rounds right now in the one of the most prestigious tennis tournaments of all time and of the season, obviously, with majors and grand slams in tennis. But we'll start with the Royals because that's probably what's on everybody's mind, and that's what's on my mind after hearing Dayton Moore talk yesterday. The Royals do win again 6-2 over the Angels last night. Hey, they've won 4 of the last 5, so it's not as bad as it was, but still only 24-42. When you win 4 out of 5 and you're still 18 games below 500, You got a long way to climb out of there.
That's right.
The Royals did take a two-run lead on a two-run homer from Andrew Benintendi in the first inning. Angels did score one in the third, another in the fifth to tie the game at two, but they reclaimed the lead. The Royals did 3-2 with an RBI double from Nicky Lopez in the seventh, as Chris Bubich had gotten through the sixth, and they took the lead back. So he was the pitcher of record, as the Angels didn't score again. The Royals did get three runs, as you heard there, in the eighth inning on a two-run homer from Salvador Perez, another solo shot from Hunter Dozier. And again, Bubich ended up with the win, his first victory of the season, to move to 1-4. Definitely his best outing, going six innings, giving up just two runs and seven strikeouts he had. Mike Matheny, the Royals manager, gave his thoughts on Chris Bubich's performance last night in Anaheim.
I thought he was great. You know, we had a couple of the young guys come here last year and have a rough way to go. And to go 3-0 to that first hitter and then fight his way back into the count. And then, you know, it took him, I think, 24 to get through that first, but he kept challenging, and come back with a zero after we score a couple runs is huge. And then thought he just got better, really no troubles at all to the fifth. And then the sixth, strikes out the side, I think it was, looked as strong as ever, but just pitch count got up at that point, but did a really nice job. I thought all the way through, he used everything, used it on both sides, and made really good pitches when he got in a bind.
This is Mike Matheny on Bubich. Again, a great game for Bubich, and we've been waiting, obviously, for something good to happen with Chris Bubich. And we kind of saw it a little bit his first start back from Omaha when he got sent down, and they worked with him like they did with Brady Singer, and a little bit of it, but it came back to bite him in the sixth inning. This time he does get through the sixth, and again, had an outstanding game as the Royals won it by a final of 6-2. And again, they're now 24-42. The Angels 33-37. After a great start, the Angels continue to not be their average at best right now, the way they're playing. But again, a win for the Royals last night. Game 2 of 3 tonight in Anaheim. Jonathan Heasley 1-3. The 3.72 ERA starts for the Royals against Reed Detmers. The Angels 2-3. The 4.25 ERA. First pitch at 8:38 from Angel Stadium coming up tonight.
Nice little road trip. I mean, a good start to the road trip, and hopefully they can finish it off and somewhat strong and just kind of build some consistency. You're not
whatever
gonna get
that means
this
at this
year,
point of the season for the Royals.
Right,
yeah,
yeah. Build some consistency. See if you have some parts.
You play the A's and Angels all the time. Maybe you
there you go.
Games.
Yeah,
the A's for sure. The A's are not good. The Angels are not as good as they should be, and we've said that the last couple of years about the Angels. I mean, yeah. Of course, they dealt with Trout with an injury last year, and that obviously derailed a little bit of what they could do. But, you know, with Shohei Ohtani and what he does, and it's just, you know, the Angels. And, again, they got off to a pretty good start. It was 27-17, and now they're 33-37. That's not what you want. 6-20.
Yeah, 14-game losing streak, I think it was, manager, and yeah, not a good month or so for the Angels.
Phil Nevin running the show now for the Angels after they fired Joe Maddon. So, again, the Royals and Angels tonight at 8:38 from Angel Stadium. All right, Dayton Moore again talked yesterday about the Royals and the struggles that they have had this season. And so we're going to move on to that, and then after that we'll talk more baseball. Again, a Yankees pitcher having a great outing, and we'll get a Cubs update from Jason, College World Series as well. But I want to kind of dive into this a little bit with Dayton Moore speaking yesterday. This is really kind of the first time he's had a long public speaking situation about where the Royals sit right now. So this is going to be a little over about 2 minutes and 20 seconds here of Dayton Moore chatting about the Royals, where they're at right now, and how he feels about maybe some of the struggles that they've seen this year and taking responsibility for that.
We're going to continue to work extremely hard. We're not asking you to accept anything. We're accountable for what we do, but we're working extremely hard. We believe in our players. I think the focus has never been better. The support we have in ownership is very strong. I think a lot of it, Vahe, more than anything else, is just not make excuses, just put our head down, focus on trying to get better each and every day. There's no need to try to defend anything that we're doing because people are going to form their own opinion about it, and they should form their own opinion. That's the great thing about baseball. We want our fans engaged. It's okay. It's okay to criticize. It's okay to ask questions. They should ask questions, and that's the beauty of baseball, and that's what we want, and that's what we desire. You know, we're just going to be really, really focused on what we do. We've done this in this market before. We've learned a lot in this journey, in this process, and I'm confident that we're making the right decisions today that are affecting our future in a positive way in the next 3 to 4 years. Whether we realize it or not, whether we want to accept it or not, this is a necessary phase of what we have to go through. Tension is high. People are frustrated. But it's how we deal with that frustration, how we manage that tension, that's ultimately going to bring us together. Are we going to blame one another? Are we going to look for solutions? Are we going to be accountable at every level? Or are we going to pass on that responsibility to somebody else? But it's a necessary phase of what we're going through, what we're going to need to ultimately win a championship again. I mean, it's most people that follow baseball and understand baseball like all of you do, and our fans in Kansas City know it so well. They're great baseball fans. They're smart baseball fans. They recognize that there's talent on this field. There's players that have a chance to be perennial all-stars. It's just becoming that consistent producing player. And the only way to achieve that is you have to go through it every single day at the major league level. But there's a lot of talent on the field. There's talent on the horizon. And I feel really good, Vahe, with where we are.
Okay. There's a lot there. And I made a few notes here.
Yeah.
The last thing that he said, it's going to be hard to get Royals fans to agree with that.
Yeah.
I feel really good. Let me play that again.
That is, you have to go through it every single day at the major league level. But there's a lot of talent on the field. There's talent on the horizon. And I feel really good, Vahe, with where we are.
Whew. Royals fans are not going to get on board with that. I feel really good about where we are.
The first thing he says is we don't have to accept anything. We don't have to accept what's going on. So that kind of admits that something bad is happening.
And he starts out and, you know, take responsibility. We have to. But when he says that at the end, that he says, I feel really good about where we are. Well, I can't accept that, right? Like, you don't have to accept it, and I won't accept it. I won't accept that part of it. I don't feel good about where the Royals are, because there's a lot of things that he says in there that I 100% agree with. 3 years ago, this is not where this team is supposed to be right now,
based on what was
supposed to be the trajectory of where this team was supposed to go by this point. And listen, the kids in the background, he was speaking at Jewish Community Center where he does a baseball camp there in Kansas City. So the kids were having a good time with the camp. And so this is actually a time of the year that media actually goes to seek out Dayton Moore, because they know he'll be out in public, so they can find him and not have to worry about that. Dayton Moore, obviously not the GM anymore, but higher up now with the Royals as far as his title is concerned. But still, I feel like pulling all the strings. J.J. Piccolo is a GM by name only in my mind. I don't know what he's really actually doing as far as getting this team personnel and putting it where it needs to be. But again, he's talking about they're making the right decisions today for 3 to 4 years down the road. Weren't we saying that 3 years ago?
Right,
we're making the right decisions today for 3 or 4 years down the road. He didn't say we're making the right decisions 3 years ago. He didn't say we're making the right decisions today for 6 to 7 years down the road. That's what bothers me the most about this. Yep. That's what bothers me the most about where the Royals are at coming into 2022, because we were fed that this was the year that could be like 2013, where you'd make that turn, you make that move. 2014 obviously was the big move to make it to the World Series. You weren't expecting that, being two games under 500 at 48-50 at one point in the season. But you go on that hot streak, make the World Series. The next year, you're a champion. And so we've seen the process, and we've seen it. It took a long time the first time around when Dayton Moore did this. And he's absolutely right. In a small market, you know what it takes. You know what you have to do to turn it around, and you know what you have to do to win. But this is not the projection that the Royals had 3 years ago.
No.
Today, he says, we're doing the right things for the next to be good in 3 to 4 years. And it's like, how can we accept that? And I, like he says at the beginning, you don't have to accept it. And I won't accept it, because that's not where this team was supposed to be. You know, he talks about it being a necessary phase that each team has to go through. We've gone through this phase for a lot of years already. And it's like, no, this is actually not where we were supposed to be with this phase right now. And again, a lot of that is predicated on who you thought might be playing for this team, and continuing injuries to Adalberto Mondesi continue to mix up and mess up what the Royals do offensively and what their lineup looks like. And I know you can't predict those things, but you still have to have a backup plan. You can't just sit here, and especially going into this year, with all the injuries that Mondesi has had in his career, you can't just expect, hey, he's going to go out there and be our everyday shortstop and everything's going to work just fine. We're going to move Nicky back over to second base. We have Bobby Witt at third. Witt's going to play out in right. We're going to be solid, set, good to go. Michael A. Taylor in center. Benintendi's a Gold Glover in left. I mean, everything looked good really on paper. But one injury, and we talked about that before the season even started, if Mondesi is not healthy and can't be healthy, then it's not going to go on the right trajectory. And this is not at all what I want to hear from Dayton Moore, what he said yesterday, because it contradicts everything that you've been trying to feed us prior to this year, that said this year should be the year you're starting to make that push for maybe a wild card or at least a winning record.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not happening right now. And,
right.
And so a lot of that, he says that his ownership group has confidence in him. And I'm like, it's hard for me to believe how. Like, we've talked about this multiple times already this season. Like, he says we're going to be held accountable, but are you actually being held accountable by the people that need to hold you accountable?
That's probably what we're going to see at the end of the year, is who is really going to be held accountable. Is it going to be Dayton Moore himself that maybe has to find something else to do, or is it going to be JJ, who's in that role that we think is maybe name only? I don't know. And I think you also have to see what the ownership group is going to do. We saw the last one did what they had to do at the end of the run, or, you know, to get over the hump during the run. They went out and got the James Shield trade and made that. And you know, they didn't spend a ton of money, but they spent some money to you know, Johnny Cueto and stuff like that. You know, they have to be held accountable too. But here's the problem. There's nobody that can hold them accountable. Yeah. Dayton Moore can't tell them what to do.
Yeah.
You know, we can't tell them what to do. The only way we can do it is as a whole group, is, you know, not go to games or whatever. And we don't want to do that. We want to participate in this. We want to have the bus trip. We want to have things like that. And so, you know, as fans, you don't want to threaten that, because that's no fun either. You want to be part of this. So, I don't know, you know, you don't want to put it all on ownership, because, you know, at the same time, this team did go out and get Zach Greinke. This team did go out and get Carlos Santana in the last couple of years to try a couple of different things. Carlos Santana thing didn't work out. The Mike Minor for Amir Garrett thing didn't work out really the way you wanted it to. There were some decisions with some of the starting pitchers going to the bullpen, and some of the guys that maybe should have been in the bullpen being starting pitchers, and you had to move people to Omaha to fix that, and so that doesn't help your big league club there when they're in the midst of a losing streak. So you're right. I bristle at the term small market team, because, you know, Kansas City, you know, Beloit's small market. Oberlin's a small market. Kansas City's not a small, you know.
Well, not for what we do, but right. Kansas City is definitely a small market for professional sports.
But, you know, but you're in it. If you're in it, you gotta compete. And so, especially with the TV rights and the radio rights and the multimedia rights, it's a little bit easier to field yourself a competitive ball club than it ever has been. You just have to be willing to put your part into it. And so I want to see some accountability from the ownership group. Now, I know they're not going to go out and spend $200 million on payroll. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, you know, if a shortstop gets hurt and a couple guys are on a slow start, that shouldn't derail the whole thing. And, you know, so other teams are going to have a couple of guys with a slow start, too, and they find ways to get past it. You can't just put it on. You can't be so paper thin that one injury, like you said, throws things off. And I know there's more than just the one
and
injury.
But, you know, when Michael A. Taylor goes down and he's on the injured, he's back now. But when he was on the injured list and then you're trying to figure out where to put everybody and you end up having MJ Melendez out here and right more often than I would have wanted as he's developing and growing. We've talked about that. You have other guys that are moving to positions that you don't really want them to be in, but they kind of have to play. But again, that still goes back to that's just two guys, right? Like you've got to figure out backup plans and you've got to have it ready to go. The thing with the small market, and I get what you're saying, is that the ownership has to take accountability too and maybe go find somebody, but you're not going to do that until you start winning. You're not going to spend money on something like in a small market, okay? That's the difference between the Royals and the Yankees or the Cubs or somebody that has the big market, the money, mm-hmm. and the owners that understand the market that they're in a just a mega market like New York. You understand that, hey, our fans want to win right away, and we have the means to try to win right away. And so they don't have to worry about that part of it. Now, for the Royals, for John Sherman and his group, they can't just be spending money. And you know, you've talked about the Mike Minor trade again. You can't be spending that money on Mike Minor if you're spending that money on Zach Greinke, and you're not planning to have these guys in the future anyway. So and this isn't the year to do those kind of things. Now, if it's after the 2013 season, a similar record, you go 86-76, you're coming into the next year, this is when you go spend that money. You figure out give me like 2-3 guys that I feel are going to put us over the top. Maybe they're not, maybe they are, but you gotta go identify those guys. Give me those 2-3 guys, like, and they didn't even do that really last time. They didn't spend a lot of money until they made the push there in 2015 and then traded away a lot of players. They still didn't spend a lot of money. They traded prospects. They traded possible future value for Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist, but they didn't spend a lot of money because they knew those guys were rental players. So they're strategic moves that you still have to make. It's signing Alex Rios. It's signing Nori Aoki. It's getting guys like that can be part of what you're doing. It's signing Irvin Santana again and finding James Shields in a trade well before that to maybe put yourself in the right position, because those are still not moves that were made that cost the Royals a ton of money. They're moves that were made because, okay, we're trying to make this projection go a little bit faster. And the thing that bothers me the most about what Dayton Moore said in there, and listen, I know he has good points, and I understand what he's trying to say, mm-hmm. but he's saying these things, and again, in my mind, 2 to 3 to 4 years late. He was saying the same things 3 years ago.
Right.
I mean, don't kid yourself. He was saying the exact same stuff. But the problem with this for me is we've been through it before as a small market team. We know what you have to do. We've gone through it. It's a necessary phase. You have to go through this to get to this. We've done it before in the small market. Now, I don't want Dayton Moore to use the small market as a crutch, but okay, you've done it before. Then why didn't you learn from your mistakes before? Because not everything was, as Patrick Mahomes like to say, rainbows and flowers or something. I like to say sunshine or roses, right? Like, not everything was perfect the first time around. You struck gold for about a year and a half with the moves you made. But outside of that, you made a lot of mistakes to get to that point.
Yep.
And the top of that list is pitching and developing pitching, and they've never been able to do it. So why didn't you learn from the first time and maybe figure out where your issue is, where your deficiencies are in developing pitching? Because that's been the biggest issue. You don't have to, maybe you don't have to go get Edinson Volquez and James Shields and hope Wade Davis is going to work out as a starter initially when you trade for him, and go in to get these other guys, and then Luke Hochaver, a number one pick, ends up in the back part of your bullpen, or, you know, some long relief at times. And so that's the biggest thing for me, is like, why are we not understanding that Brady Singer is better than Chris Bubich at the start of this season of putting him in the starting lineup? Why did we have to send him down to Omaha to get the right training to be a starter when he's already been a starter in this league. Chris Bubich, why did it take so long? Why did you leave him in the rotation so long before maybe you made that decision with him too? And I still don't. I mean, Chris Bubich had a good game last night, but I'm not guessing that's going to be a consistent thing with Chris Bubich. You can see it more with Brady Singer. You could see it last year with Brady Singer. If he could develop something else, could be a really good pitcher as a starter in this league. Daniel Lynch is going the wrong way right now. We've talked about it ad nauseum with these guys, that they do not develop starting pitching. And maybe you should learn from the last time to where you get down the road here, and maybe Ace Lacy is not up here as quick as you wanted him to be, and now you're going to trade him because we got good again. Now we're going to trade Ace Lacy and four other pitching prospects to get the equivalent of Johnny Cueto next time the Royals maybe get lucky enough to go through this again. Listen, I love what he's saying, and I agree with him. Like at the beginning of the season, the excitement was there because Bobby Witt Jr. was on the opening day roster. We were ready to see him. He comes out day one, boom, game-winning RBI. We're feeling real good about where the Royals are. We weren't feeling good about where they were offensively that day. But we, you know, it's like, hey, they might have potential. They'll get it going. Get it going. Bobby Witt will get it going. And comes out first day and gets the game-winning RBI. And all the excitement is there. And then I'm still in my mind thinking about when I went down to Wichita last year and watched the Naturals play the Wind Surge and what I saw from MJ Melendez. And I was just as excited about Melendez that night as I was Bobby Witt Jr. Nick Prado's still sitting down at Omaha. I understand. That's awesome. We got him coming up. Pascantino at Omaha is just raking right now, just hitting bombs left and right and hitting for power. And it's something you love to see. What pitchers are dominating right now at the minor league level? Because I don't hear about them. All I hear about are these position players that are going to come up and take these jobs. Right. And all I hear about is MJ Melendez and Bobby Witt Jr. And so that's the biggest problem I have with this long two-minute and 20-second clip that we played is, well, the end of it. I feel really good about where we're at right now. No, I don't, first of all. And we shouldn't be making these decisions today for 3 to 4 years down the road still.
Yeah, you're right. It's all about the pitching and – You don't have to develop a full staff. There's always a mixture of go out and getting guys and finding guys that are on the down, you know, trying to squeeze what's left of veterans, trying to go find the studs in free agency and you know, there's just you got to have a mixture of it all and developing your own guys, whether they're in their prime or on the come up or whatever it is, you got to have that mix. And right now I just don't see it. They got a couple of pieces in the back end of the bullpen that I think are okay, but I don't know if I want to take a team and depend on those guys completely 100% yet. Singer is showing some things. We know Lynch kind of has the arm talent, but does he have, the development? Is he going to be that consistent guy? And so that's where these next, I think, 6 weeks or whatever it is to the trade deadline is kind of important. It's like you got to find somebody that's been somewhat consistent, or else you just have to say, if nobody steps up and is as above average or consistently average, you just gotta blow it up and just start all over, which kind of sets you back, which is too bad because you do have some position players that are A, already in place, and B, on the rise with Witt and Melendez. And I just, it'd be too bad. Patience only runs so far for these fans. And you got to give them something every few years to try to keep that confidence and keep that energy going. But, I don't see what Dayton Moore is seeing right now that he says at the end of that clip. Yeah. But
and that's just the thing for me is, like, Dayton Moore's a smart guy. I know he is. He knows baseball. He obviously learned from some greats when he was with the Braves organization and understanding how to build a team and what it takes to win. The Braves are a little bit different than the Royals, too, with what they can do. Mm-hmm. And probably ownership that they had while he was there was maybe a little bit different. But I just – it's smart stuff, and he's saying things that are very, very true. But they were the exact same things that were very, very true 3 years ago.
Right.
And a lot of projections. I was looking, you know, the what we thought about the Royals coming in. I think I said maybe 78 wins was kind of what I was looking at, yeah, maybe this year. Somewhere where you're hovering maybe 500 and it doesn't work out in some of these games. You go on one of those losing streaks, not five of those losing streaks.
Right.
And I mean, 78 wins is not happening with this team right now.
No,
I mean,
no.
But the projections were anywhere from 70 to 76 for a lot of the people that were doing that. And so 70 and 92 obviously would be an improvement somewhat of what we've seen, but you try to move. Actually, I think they were 70, 92 last year. But it's just, you want to see the improvement, and you want to see this team at least kind of hovering around 500 this year, at least close to that. And we're just not seeing that. So that's the thing that bothers me the most about what Dayton Moore said yesterday. It's like, yeah, I agree with what you're talking about here, but it's not this is not the time, right? Like, you should have done this
right, and it's a catch,
before this year,
and it's a catch 22. If your record is so bad at the end of the season, you go into free agency. Well, we already know that Kansas City's not going to go out and get the top free agent that's out on the market, you know, where that person, no matter where they go, is going to get their money. You know, they have to look at some of the second level guys. And so now, if you're nowhere close, you know, there's two ways to lure a free agent. That's that, you know, you can give them the opportunity to win, or you can give them the money. And if you don't have the opportunity to win, or if you don't look like you're close to the opportunity to win, you have to take that same guy and overpay him a little bit, which only hamstrings your ability to win. So it's a weird catch 22 that, yeah, it's nice to just, you know, what you call tank and get the first pick of the draft and do all this. But at the same time, baseball's just a little bit different in that the draft isn't as immediate as, say, the NFL or the NBA draft. This mm-hmm. takes a long time for a lot of these players to come up. Now, Bobby Witt Jr. might be the exception, but you're not seeing these guys for 2 or 3 years in a lot of cases. And so that number one draft pick or the you know, top five draft pick or whatever isn't as fruitful a lot of times as the NFL drafts, and so, or immediate. So it's that catch 22 is like, you got to build something towards something, but if you're just always stuck at 70 wins or 68 wins and go on that big losing streak because you're a little thin because you consider yourself a small market team, it's just a catch 22 where these free agents aren't, they don't think there's a chance to win there, so they don't come. And so it's a vicious circle, but you got to find a way to break out of it. And it starts with developing some pitching that makes it look like you have something to build towards.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something they haven't been able to do. And so you talk about, you know, the draft. Obviously, the draft is a process, and everybody you get there, it's a process to get them up to the big leagues. You're not going to have many people that are doing what Bobby Witt Jr. is doing right now, right? Like, drafted in 2019, you go through 2 years in the minors and you're, well, you know, two and a half whenever he starts in low A ball, rookie ball. But really, your first full year would be the year after you get drafted,
because right.
you're drafted in the middle of the season. So 2020 and 2021 are really the only years he spent in the minors. In 2020, he didn't spend in the minors because they didn't have a minor league season. And
yeah.
so 2021 is really the only time he spent in the minors, and he's already on the big league club. And you don't see that fast track a lot with these type of guys that the Royals are picking, or really any baseball guys. You know, you've seen it with a guy like Bryce Harper before, and some of these guys do get up and get out there fairly quickly, and they're out and part of this. But
Witt's also part of a baseball family. Yeah. So
and he's a high schooler, too.
Right.
Like your fast track is usually a guy that at least spent a year or two in college and then gets up.
Yep.
And but yeah, I mean, it helps when you're from a baseball family, you understand the game.
Not everybody's going to have that.
Yeah, and exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I just there's too much there that I don't like about what Dayton Moore said. Again, there's a lot there that I agree with, right? But it's misplaced time wise. It's not. This is not. That is not encouraging to Royals fans when he says that. This is what we're doing, the good, right things now for 3 to 4 years down the road. How many times are you going to kick that can down the road and try to sell us the goods here? And it's just not happening. The Royals did win 74 games last year. So 78 was the projection kind of that I had in my mind, at least make some improvement, get hovering around 500, and we're simply not seeing that. They're not at all on pace to win even 74 games this year. They're 24-42. So, again, they've won 4 of their last 5, at least going somewhat in the right direction. But, again, I feel good about where we are. Yikes. Big yikes, as I would say. All right, time for the Cubs update.
All right, it's brought to you by Famous Chicago and Oprah Winfrey. 12-1 loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates.
It's like when the Cubs lose, they lose, man.
Yeah,
like,
they don't mess around.
They just don't leave
it
out.
They don't mess around. Pittsburgh got them 12-1. Chicago is now 25-42. So, yeah.
Yeah. There we are. Well, at least somebody that is part of our station has a team that wins baseball. Gerrit Cole, though, will continue to top the list of the best active Major League pitchers without a no-hitter. Had a spectacular 7-inning performance. New York's 4-2 win over the Rays at Tropicana Field last night. He put the Yankees a season-high, tying 33 games over 500. They're 50-17. Matching the historic 1998 club for the third best 67-game start in franchise history. 50-and what would it be like to be a team like that? 50-17, and that ties for the third best start in franchise history. This is not even close to the best. Cole was trying to become the 13th pitcher to throw a no-hitter in pinstripes, allowed only 3 base runners through seven innings before Isaac Paredes of the Rays hit a sharp grounder up the middle of the eighth to put an end to the longest no-hit bid of Cole's major league career. So it was a great effort. 7 innings of no-hit ball, but it's broken up in the eighth inning. Gerrit Cole, though, does get the win, and the Yankees win again. Again, they're now 50-17 after that win last night. Major League Baseball standings. Again, obviously the Yankees in first place in the AL East there. And looking pretty good. Again, they're 12 games ahead of the Blue Jays. They're not a terrible team.
No.
Blue Jays are 38-29.
It's a good division.
They're a fine team. They're 12 games back as far as that's concerned. The Twins still have a one game lead over the Guardians. Twins are 38-30. AL Central. Houston's 41-25. AL West leader. Mets are 45-24. New York baseball continues to rule the roost this year as the Mets have a 5.5 game lead over the defending World Series champion Braves. Brewers are in first place by a game over the Cardinals at 39-30, and the Dodgers 40-25 ahead of the actually they're still percentage points tied ahead, but technically tied with the Padres, who are 42-27. So the winning percentage is .615 for the Dodgers, though. Again, obviously that all plays out because you play the same amount of games by the end of the year. So as long as everything works the right way and you don't have to have tiebreakers come into play, you'll figure it all out. But the Royals 24-42, they are not the worst team in baseball right now, so that's always helpful. They are actually better than a couple teams. The A's, who they just beat recently and won 2 out of 3, I believe. And then the Reds, who are 23-43, are behind the Royals as well. The Cubs are just half game ahead of the Royals right now, record-wise. Hey, won 4 out of 5, and that made Jason feel great when I said that. We've been talking about how bad the Royals are this year, and the Cubs are just a half a game better at this point in time. All right, so there's your baseball update as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. College World Series is continuing on in Omaha. An elimination game on Monday, trailing 2-0 going into the sixth inning. Auburn scored 4 in the sixth, 2 more in the seventh, for a 6-2 win over number 2 Stanford, eliminating the Cardinal from the College World Series. On the winner's side of the bracket, Ole Miss rolled to a 13-5 win over Arkansas to get one step closer to the National Championship Series. Two elimination games are on the docket today. Texas A&M facing Notre Dame at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Arkansas meets Auburn in all SEC showdown at 6 o'clock this evening at Charles Schwab Field in Omaha. So let's look at what's going on in the College World Series.
The weather's cooperating there in Omaha. Usually likes to throw a wrench in there at some point, but so far so good.
So far so good. Texas got beat out right away. Horns down.
Colton centers one.
Kind of watching this game last night, kind of not, but had it on the TV anyway, and the Lightning, you just can't ever count them out. You can't bury these guys. That's the message from last night with Tampa Bay winning. That put them up 3-1. They added three more goals after that to take a 6-2 win over the Avalanche. Colorado had been dominant the first couple games, especially in game two, but Tampa Bay comes right back. They go home and win 6-2 and make this a series again in the Stanley Cup Finals, winning game three again. Now it's 2-1 Avalanche. The Avalanche actually scored the first goal 8 minutes in, but Tampa Bay scored two there in the first period. They scored four more in the second period. Nobody scored in the third period. Again, Colorado still holding that 2-1 advantage, but a big win for the Lightning last night to get themselves back into it. Again, they are the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion. We talked about that a little bit. Different personnel, a little bit different look this year, but they're doing the right things and have put themselves in position to try to fight for a third straight championship. Colorado still the better team, I think, and feel about this series, but Tampa Bay's not going to go away.
Right. And again, I was all set to watch game three last night, but then I knew one friend was already going, but the wrestling show was up in Lincoln. So I knew one friend was going, but he showed us where his seats were on a text picture, and I'm like, oh, they're not going to get on TV. So, but then another friend said, oh, I'm just right here, and you know they do a bunch of camera shots there. So I spent like half the night looking for him, you know, just seeing if he'd show up on TV, and eventually saw him. So I'm like, all right, now that I saw him and I saw him on TV, I'll like now go back to the hockey game, and oh. It was 6-2 at that point. So I was like, oh, yeah.
Missed all the action.
Yeah. So, which I've done now twice. So, yeah, I'm like, didn't watch it at the beginning and then go to check in later and thinking, all right, I'll catch half or the last period or something. And game two was a blowout and this one wasn't very, very close either. So, all right, the next one, I guess I'll just have to. I keep saying I want to try to watch the finals a little bit more, but you know, I just get distracted.
Yeah, I hear you there. I'm easily distracted. That's why I haven't watched Top Gun yet. Lightning again, still down 2-1, but they host the Avalanche again, game four in Tampa on Wednesday night. All right, moving on. This broke this morning. In golf, and we have said Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed were really kind of the next two that were expected to leave the PGA to go to LIV Golf, right, in the Saudi-backed league. And again, if you leave the PGA, and well, technically you didn't actually leave the PGA,
right.
But they
suspended
left
you.
The PGA
yeah, yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
You are suspended if you go to LIV Golf. That happened to 17 golfers that participated in that first LIV Invitational tournament there in London. And the newest is four-time major champion Brooks Koepka to defect from the PGA Tour to go to the LIV Golf International Series. Sources have confirmed here today, the 32-year-old, one of the highest-profile players to join the breakaway circuit. Obviously, you know, the top of that list and everybody was talking about when it all came out was Phil Mickelson, and he very, he was later than some people that decided to do so, but he very clearly was going to go to the LIV series, and he did just that and has said his goodbyes basically to the PGA and thanked them for what they did. But it is interesting, I feel like, when you see a guy like Brooks Koepka do this, you're seeing guys with names that are leaving and obviously connected with DeChambeau and Reed and guys that have won majors that, you know, I remember when we were talking about Brooks Koepka won his second straight U.S. Open. I can't remember what year that was. I'm going to pull up his Wikipedia page. But I remember saying at the time, and actually we talked about this shortly after you started working with us with the Masters, with all this focus and being on Tiger Woods, that somebody needs to come and grab this that's younger, that's somebody different. And I remember when it was 2018, when Koepka won his second straight U.S. Open, and on the leaderboard was Brooks Koepka at the top, and I know that, you know, they were that's the final leaderboard. Maybe I'm thinking of it. Well, it wasn't. It was, what did he win? He won the U.S. Open. Okay, so he won the PGA, I believe, was the one that I need to look at the leaderboard. Yeah, it was the PGA. So he had just won the U.S. Open in 2017 and came back and won a second major in 2018, the PGA. And the story, in my mind, was like, we got a young two-time winner of a major here that maybe taking golf by storm here and changing what people see. Well, Tiger Woods was right behind him. So the story was Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods finished two behind him,
right.
Finished second in the PGA that year and didn't win the meet. Ended up getting back, winning the Masters and getting that major again. But Brooks Koepka, I felt like, was a pretty good story. And so, but now we talk about, and I talked about that when they had this big to do about Tiger Woods at the Masters this year. They did this like hour long preview show that commemorating his 25th year anniversary of the dominant performance that he had at the Masters. And I'm like, at some point you got to move forward. And right now PGA is in the middle of it, man.
And now their guys are gone. Right?
These guys are leaving. And so Liv is the talk right now, not PGA. And listen, I get it. I understand that the PGA says, and they probably still are the best tour in the world, right? And the best opportunity to get your name out there. But that's changing fast if you get continuous defections like guys like Brooks Koepka that are going to leave. Now, obviously, people like Rory McIlroy, Colin Morikawa, if some of those guys go ahead and stay, and some of those names that we're starting to hear a little bit more and more and more as we go, then, and Will Zalatoris, you know, he's come close the last few tournaments and done good things. But Koepka, it's not good for your association when Brooks Koepka and guys like that are leaving.
It's weird, and it's like Tiger is just wired, I think he's kind of changed a little bit, but Tiger was just wired so different that that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to dominate so bad and not just win, but he just wanted to win everything. And so he played a ton of golf. He played the events, and he played the weekly events, and he played the majors, and he was just wired that way. The newer guys, and it's better for them in the long run, you know, better life balance and longer career they'll have, that they win for a while, and they each kind of have six-month stretches, it seems. Like all these guys, you know, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Koepka, you know, all these guys kind of seem to have six-month stretches where they're kind of going to be the guy. Jordan Spieth is another one. And then, you know, for their betterment and the elongation of their career, they kind of take time off. And it's better for them, personally, but it's not necessarily better for their game, or it's not necessarily better for the PGA Tour, because then they come back and they don't quite have the rhythm that Tiger had when he played all the time. And so nobody has really grabbed the tour by the horns, and now half of them are leaving. Koepka, in a way, doesn't surprise me.
No, it doesn't surprise me. No.
Koepka has stated, he's like, I don't want to play golf 35 weekends a year.
It is interesting to me that Koepka and DeChambeau would go to the same.
that's a little bit. But Koepka has said, I just want to get ready. Now, he had to get established first and win a couple of events, get some money, get the sponsorships, get that major to be able to do this. But now he just wants to focus on majors. So he'll play maybe the week before up to a major. And he's even said he wishes golf was 12 holes long. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Works out.
So this LIV Golf is right up Koepka's alley. But, you know, God bless him for only wanting to work 10 weeks a year. If it works out for him, I guess it works out for him. But, Koepka's not a huge surprise at this point. Yeah. I still think 2 years down the road is when it's going to be interesting. Is like, does this LIV Golf still have the money coming in to be able to pay these guys? Mm-hmm. And then what do you do if these guys want back on the PGA? They're like, you know, they'll get allowed back. But, you know, it'll just be interesting to see how hard of a front the PGA Tour puts up.
Yeah, and, you know, it's easy to do right now because they have an outlet and the golfer's like, okay, suspend me. I'm still going to be golfing. And right. I'm going to be making more money than I'll make with your tour anyway. Most if I perform
and it's,
even remotely
semantics.
Well.
Like, you could just kick them off the tour, but no, you're not going to do that.
Yeah,
you're suspending them.
Suspend them.
So
because,
the second that they're available, say the LIV crashes and burns, the second they're available, you can lift the suspension.
Because these are names you want as part of your
you
association.
Want them on TV. Yeah.
So it is interesting. Like I said, with the whole dynamic of Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka, and they're both going to be going to LIV. I know it's a little bit of a rivalry there that kind of blew up for a little bit. It's not talked about as much as it was there for a little bit. But another sport that you're like, man, can we get new names here? Can we change the top of this? Well, there's a guy that's trying to. But he's not eligible to play in the next Grand Slam, and that's Daniil Medvedev from Russia. He would be likely the number one or two seed at Wimbledon if they would allow him to play. But if you are from Russia or you're from Belarus, you are not allowed to play because your government has decided to attack and
go on
Ukraine. I'm not going to start a whole or open a can of worms about that. But when it came out, I'm still like, okay, Daniil Medvedev is not the guy that pulled the trigger on that decided to invade Ukraine. I don't get it. Daniil Medvedev cannot play. There was a doubles player. I don't know her name. I'm not going to try to say her name, but she's from Russia. But before a deadline had passed, changed her nationality to Georgian. And so Georgia is not a country that's involved with this.
Right.
It's funny because I actually played tennis in high school against a kid that was from Georgia. Hey, you don't look like you're from Georgia, the country, not the state.
Right.
And he was from Nest City and was a foreign exchange student. He was a cool dude. I like playing tennis against him. He came to one of our camps one year in the summer. I got to know him. But, so this female player's a doubles player again and just changed her nationality to Georgian. Apparently it worked. They've approved it because she did it before the deadline and she can play. So with that being said, Alexander Zverev from Germany is allowed to play, but he's not going to play because he has an ankle injury. He would be one of the top. He's number two ranked. Medvedev is number one player in the world right now from Russia. Zverev from Germany is number two. I don't think people will even know that if I asked them, because you would say, okay, who are the number one and two players in the world? They would say who the number one and two seeds are for the Wimbledon tournament. Yeah. Novak Djokovic is the number one seed, and Rafael Nadal is the number two seed. So, that just, without Zverev and Medvedev, it kind of just brings that feel back down and in for one of these guys to win again. And if Nadal wins Wimbledon, then obviously he's going to have a major leg up in the Grand Slam title race as far as you get into the future and see if maybe Djokovic can pass that. But, here we go again. Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal, number one, number two seeds. Tennis, not changing at all. Hey, Caleb Swanigan. I don't know if people remember Caleb Swanigan at Purdue or not, but he passed away at the age of 25. And they had a picture of him. And he was a big dude in college, like physical big guy for Purdue.
Yeah.
He was like really, really big. Like it got out of control. And it says he died of natural causes. So I'm guessing his nickname was Biggie. Man, he looked like Biggie.
Yeah.
After he got done. But Caleb Swanigan, if you remember him from Purdue, was a great player. He spent a little bit of time, was drafted into the NBA, I believe. Never really caught on with the Kings. Blazers drafted him with the 26th pick overall, 2017 draft. Played two seasons in Portland, 45 games with three starts. Portland traded him to Sacramento in 2019, 10 games before Portland reacquired him in 2020. He logged his career high in minutes was 13 per game. Scoring was 3 per game. He was a former Mr. Basketball in Indiana. We definitely remember Caleb Swanigan more for what he did at Purdue. Averaged 14.5 points, 10.5 rebounds. And,
Nebraska
and
killer. He killed Nebraska.
Was he?
Yep.
So, yeah, Caleb Swanigan, 25 years old, passed away.
Too bad. We're
seeing more and more of that right now. And I don't like it. It's tough to see those stories come about. So, Caleb Swanigan passing away at the age of 25, the former Purdue men's basketball player. I wasn't even really going to say anything about that, but I saw it on Twitter, so I figured I'd throw it out there. Yeah, that should wrap it up for today here on the Sports Ticket. Again, first day of summer. Enjoy it. And, yeah, go Royals. Hey, 3 to 4 years, Royals are going to be right there.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.